At this time and each evening at 6:45 Eastern Daylight Time, Columbia calls in its correspondents abroad for the reports of the latest developments on the diplomatic, economic, and battle fronts. This morning we are to hear from Edwin Hartridge in Berlin, Edward R. Morrow in London, and Cecil Brown in Rome. And now, while awaiting the report of Mr. Hartridge in Berlin over transatlantic shortwave radio, here is the news from other points. In Washington today, funeral services will be held in the chamber of the House of Representatives for Speaker William B. Bankhead. He died early Sunday morning. After the services are held, a delegation of representatives and senators will accompany the body to Speaker Bankhead's home in Jasper, Alabama. President Roosevelt will travel to Alabama for the services. Meanwhile, Sam Rabin of Texas, the Democratic majority leader of the House, is certain to be chosen as Bankhead's successor. On conscription, President Roosevelt may sign the bill if he gets it before leaving for Alabama this afternoon. Otherwise, the president will sign it Wednesday when he returns. 60,000 National Guardsmen in 26 states are starting the first day of their mobilization for a year's training. And the Government Weather Bureau warned the New England coast, especially Cape Cod and Nantucket, to prepare for gales and high tides accompanying a tropical storm. And now for the report of Edwin Hartridge, we take you to Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. At dawn this morning, German bombers again roared off from their disguised airfields in France, Holland, and Belgium, and headed for the capital of the British Empire. And since this morning, there have been air battles over London and South England. But we have no further details at this moment. So whether today is going to be like yesterday, another great air attack, an air battle over London, we can't say at this moment. We have some further details about yesterday's air fighting. During an attack on the airfield at Lincoln, direct hits were scored on barracks, hangars, runways, says the latest DNB report. Then the news agency adds, and when a series of fierce aerial combats took place between the raiders and the defending planes, quote, it became obvious that the British Air Force had concentrated most of their fighters in the London area in order to frustrate the German bombing attacks, unquote. And the story continues that this concentration was confirmed by German bombers, which attacked Liverpool yesterday and met with little enemy fighter activity. However, this concentration of British fighter planes in the London area came as a surprise to the German High Command, admits the DNB. But the agency continues that it didn't halt the Germans from dropping their bombs on London. In four waves, they attacked the Albert and India docks, causing fires there. As for this side of the picture, last night before midnight, we had an air raid here. The Germans announced that British bombers were driven off by anti-aircraft fire before reaching Berlin, so all the raiders returned for home. And sometime after midnight, we had our second alarm, which lasted about 45 minutes. I was driving home, and when the siren started, I was forced to go into a shelter. Our air raid warden told us they heard some sounds of anti-aircraft fire. It was the first time that we have had two air raid alarms in one night in Berlin. And those people I encountered in the air raid shelter didn't like getting out of bed and getting dressed to go down into the basement twice in one night. The papers announced this morning that for the first time, German bombs were dropped in Belfast, Ireland, on Friday. The reports give no details except to state that objectives of military importance in Belfast and nearby coastal towns were bombed on Friday. The German press also gives us some new reasons, or amplifies old ones, why Buckingham Palace was bombed several days ago. On the back page of the Warsaw Zeitung of yesterday, there's a layout of pictures of the royal residence in London. And over the pictures is the blunt headline, quote, bombs on Buckingham Palace in retaliation for bombs on the German National Monument, unquote. And another paper, Der Montag, has an editorial claiming that Buckingham Palace is situated in the midst of other military objectives in the heart of London. It reiterates the claim that, quote, some 100 meters from Buckingham Palace there's a large oil depot serving both private and military cars, unquote. Then this paper says that the Victoria Station, which it describes as an important military transport station, is close to Buckingham Palace, while the new Air Ministry, the War Ministry, and other objectives of military significance are located nearby. The implication here is the German bombs were not aimed for the palace. There were other military targets in the area. Herr Hitler has sent President Cardenas of Mexico a telegram of congratulations on the occasion of the Mexican Independence Day. Then it was officially announced in Prague that the customs border between Germany and the Protectorate, or what was once Czechoslovakia, has now ceased to exist. Serrano Sunier, brother-in-law of General Franco and Minister of Interior of the Spanish government, arrived in Berlin this morning. He will meet Herr Hitler tomorrow. This is Edwin Hartridge, our returning out of Columbia in New York.
And that was Edwin Hartridge in Berlin. Back in New York, here is a dispatch from Vichy, France. Léon Blum, leader of the French Socialists, founder of the Popular Front and twice premier, joined two other former premiers today in guarded Chateau Chauzeron today. Édouard Daladier and Paul Reynaud were already there, as were former Generalissimo Maurice Gamelin and Georges Mandel, former Minister of Colonies. And now, for the report of Edward R. Murrow in the British capital, we take you to London.
This is London. A little before 6 o'clock this morning, Londoners came out of their shelters. The alarm had lasted all night. The sky was clouding over after a clear moonlit night. It began to rain, and many thought the mist and low-hanging clouds would silence the sirens and give London a day of rest and perhaps a little sleep. But there was an air raid alarm at 9:30, lasting less than half an hour, and another at about 10:30, which lasted roughly 1 hour. Visibility was bad. Peacetime transport planes wouldn't have taken off in such weather. Perhaps the Germans are trying to convince Londoners that they can hit the city in any weather, and that winter will bring little relief. The official total of yesterday's air battles is now given as 185 German planes down. Five British fighters, previously reported missing, have now returned to their bases. So the RAF losses for yesterday is now put at 25 fighters. During yesterday's daylight raids, hundreds of business premises, banks, insurance offices, movies, and private dwellings were damaged. Most of the damage was done in the first attack. No details of casualties have been issued. During last night's raids, the anti-aircraft barrage reached its usual intensity. From a London rooftop, I had the impression that the German bombers were not using the regular flyway or bus route up the Thames. They seemed to be coming in from all directions, and the number of Germans engaged appeared to be somewhat larger than on previous nights. I had the impression that more delayed action bombs were dropped, but one can't be sure about that sort of thing. The Air Ministry communique, dealing with last night's raids, says that a succession of small groups of bombers operated mainly against the London area and surrounding districts. But a smaller number of raids were also made against other parts of the country. In London, the attacks were spread over a wide area. Damage was done to houses, commercial premises, and other buildings. Three hospitals were damaged. Bombs also fell in many rural districts, but with little result. In the northwest and southeast of England, in South Wales, and in some other districts, including one town in the south of England, some damage was caused. One German bomber was shot down during the night. Our third alarm, since dawn this morning, ended a few minutes ago. It is believed that the first raid today was attempted by about 30 bombers escorted by 40 fighters and was directed against London. The second formation came over practically the same route, but was forced to change course by heavy anti-aircraft fire, and there was fighting out over the channel. We don't know what's happened in this latest attack, but there was very little activity over the center of London. Imperial Airways says this morning that they're not at all worried about the British flying boat Clare. They say that at the time she was reported down in the Atlantic, she had not yet taken off from Foynes, and they expect to hear of her arrival in America today. London afternoon papers emphasize Berlin comment on the surprise of the heavy fighter concentrations encountered over London yesterday, and the admission from Berlin that their bomber escorts had a hard struggle. Certainly, there were more British fighters over London yesterday than I've ever seen before, and there's good reason to believe that the RAF can put up considerably larger numbers of fighters in the air than they did yesterday. There are unofficial reports that Italian planes were seen over London during yesterday's daylight raids. Some eyewitnesses claim to have seen Italian markings on the wings, but there is no official confirmation that Italian planes have been over London. The German bombers appear to be devoting considerable time to the bombing of royalty. The Queen of the Netherlands lived for some time in a part of London which has been pretty heavily bombed. Last week, she moved to a little house on the outskirts. For two nights, bombs fell in the immediate vicinity of her new residence, and Queen Wilhelmina has now moved back to London, to a place where there is a good deep air raid shelter. There is no fresh news about the invasion, aside from the Stockholm story, that a vast military zone has been created on the southwest coast of Norway. German guns on the French coast began a sporadic shelling of Dover about 2 hours ago. As you know, we no longer have weather reports or forecasts in Britain. But one or two papers today front page yesterday's Dover weather. One paper captions its weather report as a notice to Channel passengers. I return you now to CBS in New York.
And that was London. Back in New York, here is a dispatch from Bombay. In a 100-minute speech to the All-Indian Congress today, Mahatma Gandhi reiterated his determination not to embarrass Great Britain in her hour of trial, but added that this restraint was not to result in the extinction of Indian aspirations for freedom. And next, Cecil Brown is ready to report the developments in the Italian capital. Go ahead, Rome.
This is Rome. The Italians are pushing forward in their advance into Egypt. Troops and tanks, supported by strong aviation units, are driving ahead on the coast road along the Mediterranean. The Italian High Command announced an hour ago that fascist vanguards have occupied Sogum and pushed on beyond it. Sogum is 11 miles inside Egyptian territory. The war communique says that approximately 50 British armored cars and tanks have been destroyed. We are told that retreating British units have set fire to numerous supply deposits. Italian bombers and fighter planes appear to be raiding the British incessantly. The communique tells us that the British have suffered heavy losses from fascist air attacks. The Italians also report a naval success today. The communique says in the eastern Mediterranean, fascist motor torpedo boats have sunk a British submarine. An Italian air formation attacked a British cruiser. It's reported that the cruiser was hit squarely by a medium-sized bomb. An Italian air formation carried out air-bombing attacks against an airport in Malta. The communique said direct hits were scored on anti-aircraft batteries, sheds, and other equipment. It's reported a big fire was observed. The High Command says that the British fighters over Malta refused to engage the Italian fighter plane. Instead, the British attacked the Italian bombers. The communique says the dive bombers counterattacked, shot down one British fighter and severely damaged another. All the Italian planes were reported safe. In East Africa, the communique says Italian planes bombed enemy sheds in the towns of Gaz Regeb in the Sudan. The British raided Assab, Massawa, Deberoa, Asmar, and Goura. All these towns are in Eritrea. The communique gives the results as 4 wounded, slight material damage. There is no further clarification today on relations between Italy and Egypt as a result of the invasion. An authorized source said today that Italy only has the sincerest friendship for the Egyptian people. But it was pointed out the British used Egypt as a base to threaten Libya and Ethiopia. A more sober tone than usually marks the fascist press appeared today in the Rome newspaper Il Piccolo. The words came from General Angelo Borghese, and he suggested calling a halt to the frequent use of the idea that the present Axis operations are a decisive phase. That, he said, is more of a desire than a reality. The German command, he said, knows very well that the destruction of British industries doesn't end the war, nor does the eventual departure of the royal family from London. General Borghese said the fight will still be very hard and fierce because the British have offered no indication of giving up. Unquestionably, the general added, the Italian fight against the British Empire will be especially severe. A symbolic ceremony took place in the hometown of Marshal Rodolfo Graziani. A group of fascist women there presented to Marchesa Graziani a new battle flag which is to be sent on to the Marshal. The banner is to be used by Graziani when he conquers new territory in Africa. My personal guess is that this flag is the one to be raised over Alexandria. That is, if and when the Italians capture the British stronghold in Egypt. This is Cecil Brown in Rome. I return you now to CBS in New York.
Once again, Columbia has brought you direct reports by transatlantic shortwave radio from our correspondents abroad. Today, Edwin Hartridge reported from Berlin, Edwin R. Morrow from London, and Cecil Brown from Rome. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.